Welcome to The World According to Craig and another episode of Somebody Smarter Than Me. This is getting to be a trend and I didn't expect that.
Wait a minute, I'm not supposed to be here then.
This week we welcome Derek McClay, president of EDO and basically someone who's smarter than almost anyone I know, research insights extraordinaire, somebody who observes the world. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're, you know, as we talked about, we're going to talk a little bit about what we're observing in the world today in one area that is a passion point for me and you in movies.
Yep.
But before we get there, I think it's incumbent on everybody to understand how you became so smart, like why the movie opinion matters. And I understand, you know, you were a latchkey kid,
yes.
Right?
Okay. A middle latchkey kid.
Right. So the kid.
So I was just, you know, I basically just got dumped for about 8 years from like 10 to 17.
Okay.
You know, where it was just like, no one was, you know, we had babysitters up until then, but it was basically just, you're on your own, you know?
Okay.
So if I wanted to do something, I kind of had to figure it out on my own.
Well, I mean, I've seen from all of my friends who are parents, the first child, they're very nervous about. The second child, somebody's like, they're playing with knives and eating glue. And they're like, I'm pretty sure the glue's non-toxic.
They're fine. We're all fine.
Right.
That's basically the foundation of, you know, how I got to where I got to because, you know, nobody was around. I never expected to be taught anything.
Right.
You know, so you just kind of figure things out on your own. And, you know, that's how I look at things and I go, why does that happen? And on my own, I want to figure out why it happens and come up with a reason and then test the reason and see if I'm wrong. And if I'm wrong, I try it again, you know?
Okay.
So
I love this idea of looking at it and figuring out why it happens. Cause I feel like a whole lot of people don't spend time asking why, they just do.
Right.
And we've had some guests on the show that have been, and particularly like, you know, they've had to take a beat before asking themselves what even they feel or do. And there's not a whole lot of that out in the world. You've managed to convert that into a job,
yeah.
That where you get paid to ask why,
yeah.
And to tell people why. So,
and it's funny how I got to that point because one of my fortes is forecasting. So for those of you who don't know the forecasting game, there's this, a lot of people call it just a parlor game, okay. Of that trying to understand what a movie will do on opening weekend.
So not weather forecasting, but forecasting.
Movie forecasting, what the gross is going to be on a movie the opening weekend. And it might be 2 weeks out, it might be 3 weeks out. I worked for Nielsen with a company called NRG that kind of, the founder, Joe Farrell, started the idea of polling to forecast movies. And he started that around the early 80s where they'd ask people, they'd just do a sample of moviegoers. Like, what are you most interested in seeing? What are you definitely going to see? What's your first choice to see something? And part of my job was to interpret that data into what the economic outcome was going to be opening weekend. What was really unusual about me being built for that because of my background is my very first job was an usher at a movie theater. I literally started taking tickets and, you know, with a flashlight with a little red tip on it and showing people to their seats and, you know, and tearing tickets.
And you see every type of person and why they're going to the movies.
Well, it developed that, you know, I worked my way up and, you know, when I went to SC and when I was at SC, I was an assistant manager in Westwood. Then became a film buyer for 15 years. And as a film buyer, basically, not only did I get to see pretty much every movie out there because they screen them for you, but you see how movies behave. And from working in the theaters, seeing who showed up and when, seeing theaters, what neighborhoods they're in, what the skew is, ethnic skew, financial skew, whatever, you understand by looking at that for 15 years, I can go back once I'm wrong and say, okay, my premise was these people were going to show up and these people are going to show up and these people weren't.
Okay.
By looking at what theaters did business, when they did business, how the movie played, I can see where I was wrong. And I thought these people were going to show up, but actually these people showed up.
Okay.
And once you understand that really by looking backwards, you're going to look forwards with more accuracy, the work is worth it.
I think that's what's interesting is when people think about the movies, I remember growing up, you go and see a movie in the theaters,
yeah.
Right? And I mean, I have what I say shall be broader, more generous standards. I mean, I'll go see almost any movie. I mean, I saw The Last Holiday with Queen Latifah. I saw The Holiday with Kate Winslet. Like,
you saw Best Man Holiday.
I'm willing to see almost anything. So maybe I'm not the best example, but the vast majority of people are like, oh, I'd want to go see that. And I didn't realize growing up that there was a whole science behind why movies were made, how they were marketed. I thought people just showed up on magazine covers on their own. I didn't even know what a red carpet was, so I certainly didn't intend on working on them. But little did we know that there's, you know, this culture of engineering behind it all that is from the maker of Jaws and the producer of Minions. And you're like, why are those two things on a poster together?
And it's really just, you know, now that you've kind of, because you've been wading into this with your career, you know, it's there's some fanship out there on any given movie, and the ability to activate it is the trick these days. Is how do we get to them? How do we activate them? And how do we, you know, let them know this is for them?
And who's even willing to come out in that?
Right. And there's a lot of research that goes into understanding who you need to activate.
Okay, so that brings me to like the most interesting topic, which is, in today's day and age, who do we get to activate to come out to see the movies, right? And how do the movies exist in today's cultural dynamic?
Right.
But movies are such an intrinsic part of who we are.
Right.
How do you activate those audiences? Will they, like, I mean, or better yet, can you activate those audiences? Do you see that?
I think you can. I think that, you know, first of all, when you look at what's going on in movies today, there's very slight product coming in. There are movies that, you know, would barely be blips on the screen.
Right.
And the reason their studios are putting them out is because the economic model of how expensive the movie was, how much they want to spend on opening it. It's all about, you know, what we call the break point. So what you have to do in your theatrical release is you have to get to X amount of $1 million in film rental. And that gets you to their next tier and a next tier and next tier. There are some movies that decided, okay, let's go to PVOD. And for those of you in the audience that don't know what PVOD is, it's premium video on demand. Video on demand is, you know, if you go on your DirecTV, if you go on Apple,
pay-per-view,
it's $5.
Got it.
You know, something like, for most movies, it's like $4 or $5. And generally, it's not even B or C product. It's, you know, F and G and H type.
I know. I'll see, like, there's like a new Susan Sarandon movie on the DirecTV, like, bar, and I'm like, what?
Never heard
of this movie.
And this is the movie that they're putting in also in theaters. And it's like, no, it's maybe one that they rented somewhere just so they could say also in theaters. But there's a concept of PVOD that's been around for a long time. And the idea was that we could put a first run movie at what we call day and date. And the same day it's opening in theaters, we'll go PVOD. And it just is a better way to distribute movies.
Right.
Because if people don't want to go to the movies, we want them to stay home. So it was kind of funny, you know, eventually a lot of the studios have been talking about these windows, which is the amount of time from the opens to where it goes to the next level, which is usually VOD or PVOD. They did a survey about 3 years ago, and this is when there was a lot of push that, you know, windows, which is usually being pushed by the MBAs of the studios that they hired away from McKinsey, who were in the hot dog business before, or the pizza business before they got there. Don't have it. PVOD's great. But here's where it was an interesting idea 10 years ago. It's $20. PVOD is usually $20. And frankly, when we did the survey three years ago, they go, if we had, you know, the new Avengers movie at the same time it's opening in theaters, would you pay $100 to watch it at home?
No.
People are like, no. Right. You know? I mean, it wasn't just no, it was no.
Right.
You know, would you pay $50? No. Would you pay $20? It's not no, but it's a no.
Right.
Well, we'd pay $5. And that's what they would pay. And the economics just make no sense, because you just can't get that many purchases to make up for what you would lose in theaters by having $13 or $14 for every person that walks in.
Well, and because going to the theaters is an experience.
And that's the other thing. So no one would do it on a big movie, because theatrical is good, you know, and is a better economic model, as much as people complain about it. And it's so expensive to advertise and everything. You still are getting more money out of it. The problem with everything now, and oh, by the way, the thing that kind of has negated PVOD is really Netflix, Apple, Hulu, Disney Plus.
Because you pay $9 a month. And
think of the difference in value. You're looking at $9 to $14 a month for a lot of content. Honestly, really though, more content than you can ever consume.
But a lot of those Susan Sarandon movies that aren't very good. But, not that against Susan Sarandon.
But they have some good stuff too.
Right.
You know, they have a lot of movies that do.
I have low standards, so I watched Kissing Booth and Kissing Booth too.
But there's people that really loved Kissing Booth.
Right.
I mean, they have people that really, really adore that those movies. But the fact is, I don't care how much money you spent. You know, there was that movie that Netflix had that... with Ryan Reynolds that Michael Bay directed.
Oh, the Six. Yes. Six. Underground.
Which they spend a lot of money on. I don't care how much money you spend on it. I don't care who's in it. I don't care what it's based on. Once you take that and put it on Netflix, it's TV.
Yeah.
It's more TV.
True.
Movies in theaters are going out. Okay? Staying at home and watching TV, it's all just TV. You know, it's a TV movie, but it's TV.
Right.
So to pay $20 for a movie isn't a great proposition for somebody who makes $60,000 a year, you know, or $70,000 a year, a average middle American.
If you're, yeah, at home,
at
because
home.
You're like...
Because you're already paying this and stuff and you're backed up on it and, you know, you've got all this stuff that you're watching and you're catching up.
And there's also the alternative of there's a ton of stuff that you may not want to watch as much, but it's free.
Yeah.
So
the fanship has to be pretty high to trigger that $20 purchase for 2 hours on TV. Now, people say, well, yeah, but going to a movie is $12, $13, and depending on the theater, $16, $20. But here's the difference. Let's say you and I go to the movies, okay? And for the two of us, at a fairly premium theater, like an Arclight or something like that, if you and I go there, combine what we spend, two tickets, you know, a cocktail each, a box of popcorn and maybe some candy or something like that. It's
always candy. I'm always going to get the popcorn.
It's $70, $75. Yeah. People go, $75 for a movie. What exactly can you go out and do for $70 for two people? I mean, in comparison, it's, you know, it's cheaper than live sports. It's cheaper than live music. It's cheaper than really a lot of things, unless you want to go, you know, like an art museum or something like that, where, you know, the fee is $10 to get in, but you know, that's a very specific thing. I'm talking about just going out and doing something. It's just going out to dinner is just as much, you know. It's a relatively good value as things have developed. Because like when I was in high school, going to a movie and going to a Dodger game and sitting in the bleachers was about the same price.
Oh, you
know,
really?
It's like two or $3, you know. So I'm like, yeah, you can sit in the bleachers for $3. You go to a Kings game and sit, you know, high up for $3.
Right.
You know, I mean, it wasn't. There was a more of a parody now, or going to see a concert.
Well, something. Now, I mean, you go to Disneyland, it's $150 a day.
Anything you do that's out of the house is expensive.
We all want to get out of the house.
Yeah. So that's why PVOD, more because Netflix, Apple, Hulu, and everything have really done a really good job of presenting value to the home consumer. I mean, my argument on on the effect that Netflix and Hulu and all the streamers have had, it really scares the DirecTVs and Comcast of the worlds more than it does the movie theaters, because that's the real competition. You know, it's just other TV.
Right.
They're all competing for other TV. But PVOD, you know, a lot of movies have gone PVOD just because they just didn't see, they didn't want to wait for theaters. They didn't know, and we still don't know.
So they'll cut their losses and get back what they can on PVOD, and then.
And it seemed like a really good idea. Everybody's told me the grosses off PVOD is making no one forget about theaters.
Well.
So you know, this is but the fact is we have to get there.
Right.
We have to get there. New York has to be open, LA has to be open. But I mean, we'd love to have theaters open once LA and New York get open, and assuming the rest of the country doesn't regress. It's such a chicken and the egg concept, because until those markets are open, studios do not have the confidence to go out and spend a multi-million dollar TV campaign, which is also key to the business opening.
Right.
Because a lot of these movies that have opened have been digital only, including Tenet.
You know,
I had a very small TV campaign and was mostly digital. That was another experiment that I don't fault Warners in doing, but the fact is, you know, nothing new happened. You know, they got the gross out of what they spent.
Well, that's the thing. It's almost like I look at the movies and they're constantly rescheduling and pushing back, and nobody wants to be the first.
Right.
But I'm thinking if you have City Slickers, if you have Jaws, if you have a fan, like a family friendly movie with a major name star.
Well, here's what's happening. Here's the next thing I was going to talk about. So Universal got into a little bit of a simus with AMC theaters.
With the window, we're not going to do
right.
This.
So you know, Jeff Shell got all excited about the first 3 weeks of Trolls, a Trolls World Tour, and said, you know, this is apparent. Little did he know it was a complete outlier
right.
at the time. Oops. And he went out and just kind of.
He should have been a middle latchkey kid. He would have observed more about the world, and he wouldn't have made that.
He was a little. He jumped the gun a little. But so he said, this seems like it's very obvious. This is the way we're going to go. And AMC theaters, who probably should have just stayed back and observed too, said, well, we're just not going to play your, we're not going to play your movies.
Right.
And actually, what's kind of funny in this whole situation, the exhibitors actually do have high ground most of the time. Because let's say Universal comes along and they say, we have, X movie.
Fast and the Furious 17.
17 that we're going to go VOD on the same day theatrical. The exhibitors just go, great, have a good time with it. We're not playing.
Okay.
Because they know they're the bigger component.
I mean, yeah. I mean, you've got $10 a ticket that people are willing to play.
Because Universal just turned it into TV.
Right.
And they're just like, yeah, go ahead. Do what you want. Now AMC got into, they just really, both parties are at fault for this. But they actually did come to an agreement that might help the exhibitors. Because they made an agreement that I believe it was some sort of reduced film rental to AMC. So they'll play a smaller percentage of each ticket. There's a movie called Freaky with Vince Vaughn that's kind of a very Scream, horror comedy type thing. The sequel to The Croods New Age, are both opening this month. And AMC has already made their deal. Both movies are going to go PVOD 17 days after theatrical.
Okay.
And supposedly Universal is going to spend a decent amount of money on TV for both movies.
So could this reopen theaters?
This might.
Are we going to thank Vince Vaughn for something?
Regal, kind of closed a lot of the theaters, although they're open in New York, they're open in LA. And Cinemark is the one that we've got to watch to see if they're going to make a deal by the time this airs. I mean, we will know whether Cinemark's going to play. But you'll basically have a situation where it will be the first two movies that have had a robust TV campaign or something closer to normal.
Okay.
Universal is spending the money without guarantees of New York and LA opening. I think there's a better chance of New York City opening before LA by Thanksgiving. But they've got that PVOD 17 days later, so they feel like, it's kind of weird. So let's say it's like an insurance policy, but what will be interesting to see, and luckily I work in a company where we have the tools to monitor this, I heard a rumor they were telling the exhibitors they're spending $35 million in marketing, which for something like Freaky is a good campaign. That's a great campaign. I don't think they actually said what they're going to spend on theatrical and what they're going to spend on PVOD.
Okay.
So I'm sure they're holding some back.
Right.
What will be interesting to see if they say, okay, we're going to spend 10 on theatrical and 25 on the PVOD to prop it up. I don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
Now the exhibitors are taking they're always worried about precedent because, they're smart enough because they've been between VHS and DVDs. They've heard this over and over and over again. And, they say, oh, well, we just want to try it this one time, we're going to do it 21 days after it opens in theaters.
Just this once. It's been the downfall of every teenager in history.
But there's that old joke about, would you have sex with me for $1 million? Sure. Would you have sex with me for $1 million? What kind of person do you think I am? Well, I know what kind of person you are. We're just negotiating price.
Right. Yes. This is the old Winston Churchill.
Once you open the door, they'll just do whatever they want because you did it before. We're just doing it a little different this time. So they were wary of that.
Right.
And they understand that they have high ground. But they're also just they're hurting so bad right now. What will help theaters is that in almost every, anywhere you have a major theater, it's in a shopping center. And theaters are a massive generator of foot traffic.
Okay.
Shopping centers. So, and if you think about it, if you've got, a 16-plex or an 18-plex, something like that, 40,000 square feet. What does a mall do with 40,000 square feet these days? You know, it's not like retail. It's not like Sears. Retail is going to jump on it.
Abercrombie and Fitch and Sears are not.
It's retail. You know, malls are smart enough. In fact, you might have seen something when the chairman of AMC did his earnings call. I think it was at the end of the second quarter. He said, "We have renegotiated 100% of our leases, and most of them are now revenue share leases." So the landlords saw this coming, and they say, "We need you, and we'll figure out a way to do our part to see that you survive."
So we've got malls on board, which is good. Right. We've got theaters on board, which is good. In theory, we're waiting on the studios and the governors, right?
Once LA and New York are open, and let's say most of the country is open, that whole 25% of the auditorium thing, it shouldn't be a big deal.
Well, because most movies, unless you're the Avengers, you weren't selling out 100% of tickets to your showtime.
And they can open something on 5 or 6 screens.
So this begs the question. When we look at entertainment as a whole, so let's assume people come back. Do we see people reframing how they perceive entertainment? Do we see going back to this value proposition of, okay, so I'm not paying $20 to watch something at home on TV, but I am going to pay $70 to go out. Do we see movies getting a leg up in the world, right? Yeah. Like the NBA, everybody else, you can't go out to any of these things. By the time they make it back.
You look at China, which is pretty much open and has been open for a while. China has had 2 movies in the last 6 or 8 weeks, open to $100 million over the weekend. China already went by the US in box office for the year. Just flew by it and no looking back. 2 movies. One movie they open up, they have like a China Day or something like that. It sounds like their version of 4th of July or something like that. It's like on a Wednesday and Thursday, there was $100 million just in those 2 days. And it was a very nationalistic movie, which, is kind of part of their message. But like Japan had an anime movie 2 weekends ago that did $40 million, which is insane for Japan.
So basically, if everyone could stop partying at home, and stop throwing those house parties and stop going out into the streets to celebrate championships, we could all just be back to normal sooner and I can go watch The Last Holiday Part 2 since Queen Latifah didn't die in that movie.
Well, as a Rams fan, I know we can count on them to do their part and not win a championship.
But the Rams and the Chargers are making
sure. The Chargers are already, they're working very hard to do their part.
Right. Okay.
So, but yeah, I mean, it's just like we've got to figure out how to get out of this. And, hopefully, at some point, Los Angeles will get to the point that, we can get these things
and
open.
And you think that there's a studio out there that's bolder and braver than another to say, listen, we are going to take the calculated risk of bringing something to consumers?
Outside of Universal that's hedging their bet with the Peabody, which, I thought was kind of a weird idea at the time, but now it feels like, what else are we supposed to do? It's hard to say. It really all depends. Let's say there's a movie that cost you, let's say $30 million and had a decent commercial proposition. That's the type of movie, if I was a studio, I would go out and spend $30 million on. With Wonder Woman, let's say, and I don't know the number, it's $200 million.
Right.
You're going to have to spend another $70 million, and now you've got this limited upside. That's why they keep pushing it back.
So it's A Quiet Place Part 3, 4, and 5.
I mean, Quiet Place, the sketchiest Paramount's being, and obviously they've been just in selling everything. Quiet Place would be a great example because I don't think the movie was that expensive.
Right.
Clearly it's a sequel, so it's got some value. Would be a great example. Now they're already back in the 1 year, I think 2 year anniversary of when the first one opened. So they're in March, which hopefully we'll be okay then by then.
You said it first. The lesson of COVID is we don't know anything.
We don't know anything.
If we're still trapped here in March, I'm going to shove one of these microphones through my head.
It's really, really crazy. I just hope my antibodies can last that long, it's the economic proposition. I don't know what, Disney still has 2 movies in December. One is Death on the Nile.
Right.
Which I can't imagine a cheap movie, but not super expensive. If I had to guess, it's like 70 or 80.
Okay.
But that feels too expensive for where we are now. I don't know what Free Guy is. They have basically 2 Fox movies that they inherited. I don't know what the cost of Free Guy was. Wonder Woman obviously is expensive. the Tom Hanks movie News of the World. I don't know how expensive that was, but it's Universal, so maybe they're doing their Peapod thing again. There are other things that could be going on in here.
Well, I mean, listen, I think that we're all excited for it to come back, and I'm going to go now and look at the release schedule for the next 6 months, and then we're going to personally start calling studio chairman and be like, listen, I saw this movie. It doesn't look good to you, but it looks cheap. And I'm told that like a cheap movie can work here. So I'm going to put on my sales pitch hat. You do the same, and then we can go to see the movies together. And, well, provided that Gavin Newsom complies at some point. Right?
at some point, he lets us go to a movie in LA.
Yes. No. Well, thank you so much for coming. I think it's fascinating because if you come at this from a cultural point of view, you just see movies in theaters, right? And you don't understand, like, why isn't this open? It's not as simple as to understand as a nail salon, right? Like, it's not like you just open and hope people come back. Even a restaurant, like, there's a calculus of, like, my costs are the food and things that I have to prepare. A movie's been baked, and it's in the tens of millions of dollars on a per basis. The industry was shaky as it was in some cases for how much people were spending. Maybe it'll come out smarter in this, but I think it's really helpful for people to say, this is a thread of America. Movies have been around for 100 years, and it's a thread of who we are as a country. It's one of the things that unites us, and we can all demand for them to come back, but eventually, people with the studio system have to, shall we say, have a strong cup of coffee and like pull the trigger.
Well, you know, I one of the old moguls, Louis B. Mayer, one of those guys said, there's nothing wrong with the business a good movie can't cure.
Well, hopefully there's nothing wrong with America.
And we've gotten lucky before, by the way. I mean, if you look at the economic downturn of 2008, produced right after that, one of the biggest box office, you know, Avatar and Taken and movies.
Seems like a generation ago.
Yeah, but I mean, that year ended up being insanely good, you know, because it was good movies.
Okay.
You know, and you know, next year, by the way, has, you know, because there's a lot of movies that we're going to open this year. I mean, they're all kind of jammed together.
Right. So instead of seeing a movie every Sunday, I'm going to see a movie every Friday, Saturday and Sunday.
And by the way, I think a lot of people will be there with you because I think we are all, you know, just Netflixed out.
Oh,
you know?
I can't. If I hear that opening boom sound one more time, I'm going to, at this point, can you imagine if they'd gone with the goat bleeding, we would all be dead. thanks so much for coming.
My pleasure. Thank you. This has been incredibly helpful.
Thanks so much for tuning in to The World According to Craig. If you're expecting to see a consistent theme among episodes, give up now or die trying, because this is just about really interesting viewpoints on the chaos in the world around us to help us make a little more sense of the world. And thanks to Derek for coming and helping us do that today. I really appreciate it.
Okay.
Thanks for tuning in to The World According to Craig. But it's not really the world according to me. It's according to some incredible people that I know with real everyday stories that we can all take inspiration from. I hope you'll tune in every week for a new episode of The World According to Craig.